The pressure to innovate is constant. It can be crippling, or it can be a catalyst for your best thinking and your best work. Every year, Harvard Business School Executive Education helps executives like you understand the forces that drive change and find new approaches to compete and win on innovation. Change course. Get ahead. Go. Start by going to hbs.me/go. That's hbs.me/go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hardwood Knox Podcast. My name is Dan Favalli, coming at you, as always, with my super-duper, incredibly esteemed, awesome times awesome, fantabulous, spectaculario, a little bit disappointed that he didn't get more responses to his trade idea mailbag solicitation, co-host Andrew D. Bailey. Before we dive into, I spoiled it already, a trade idea or just trade season mailbag, because we are recording this on an early Friday morning, and December 15th is Saturday when most of the free agents who signed a contract this past summer are eligible to be included in deals. But again, before we get started, I just want to remind, implore, beg, plead everyone to keep rating, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes. We really do appreciate it when we see those numbers go up. We can be found wherever else you consume your podcast, but based on our download and listening data, we know that there are more of you out there than we've seen on ratings and reviews on iTunes. So please take the 10 to 15 seconds out of your day, search Hardwood Knox on iTunes, throw us that 5-star review, give us any feedback you have, and if you haven't already, most definitely subscribe. And if you have subscribed, recommend us to a friend, family member, enemy, frenemy, whoever, a random person you meet on the street. So Andy, we have to get to the most pressing question of trade season, though, which is, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for the unofficial kickoff of trade season tomorrow. I feel like we might get more early activity than usual. It just seems like there's a lot of smoke in the air right now.
Yeah, normally this is like not a mile marker in the sense that all these deals go down at midnight, December 15th. It's just speculation's able to ramp up and become more convoluted since all these other players are able to be involved. But the Trevor Reza noise specifically makes it feel like we'll get a deal at some point. And then also just the Western Conference chaos right now, because so many teams are in the playoff race. And now you're looking at squads like the Kings, the Mavericks, who despite losing to the Suns, which is, you know, that's something, but you have teams that maybe you thought wouldn't be in the hunt to really win. And now they're probably going to go on the trade market and look for deals that would help them win. That was the rumor for Winhurst specifically, that the Kings want to get there. And, you know, you're talking about a Western Conference right now that has, and I didn't notice this, but Rob Mahoney of Sports Illustrated pointed this out, 14 teams in the West have a better record or the same record as the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference right now. So, yeah, and I think that that could just contribute to the activity.
Yeah.
But if you're ready, we will dive right into this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Our first question comes from D-Rock at @D_Rock_. Should Sean Marks, general manager of the Nets, trade Alan Crabb to open up cap space for summer 2019? This is a good place to start because Spencer Dinwiddie signed a 3-year extension with the Nets, player option on the final season, worth, I think it's $34.7 million was his max, and I'm assuming that's what he got. Solid value for both squads, but when you look at the Nets and their cap projections, now you're dealing with a double-figure hold on Spencer Dinwiddie as opposed to nothing, and I'm sure opening up cap space would be appealing, particularly if you want to carry D'Angelo Russell's hold, too. D'Angelo Russell is going to be a restricted free agent. His hold is about $21.1 million, and I know a lot of people think this Dinwiddie trade could be a precursor to could be a precursor to a Russell trade. I sort of disagree, unless there's a team like the Suns that's willing to buy really high on him. I think they want these two to play together or can believe in a LeVert Russell combination in the starting lineup long term with Dinwiddie coming off the bench, and he's not making, you know, obscene money anyway. And also, Dinwiddie can be traded in 6 months, so this is a deal that could, he's more valuable to them on this deal than he was before he signed it when they were flipping him before free agency. So if they wanted to clear cap space, you do have Alan Crabb. That is a terrible deal. I was, when he got his 4-year, $70 million offer sheet from the Nets, coincidentally, I defended it, saying it was an overpay, but that he would come close to being worth it, and he has not. His defense is sort of regressed, and he was probably overrated in Portland due to their schemes to begin with. He's a fine standstill shooter, but just doesn't do anything else. And so the Nets shouldn't be giving up any picks to get off his contract. The only hypothetical deal I could think of was if you're the Spurs, you're not going to have cap space anyway this summer. And so why not see if you can dangle Pau Gasol's deal? He's only guaranteed $6.7 million next year. And if you can put him in a trade and get back Crabb, who you just need the shooting, it isn't going to hurt your defense, which, with the exception of late, has been pretty bad. And then you get back Rondae Hollis-Jefferson as well, because I don't think he's a piece that fits in to the Nets' long-term plans. And so you get a look at him for the rest of this year. Maybe he can help you at the four defensively. He enters restricted free agency. Perhaps you get him on a value contract. But that would be the type of deal that I would look for. And then if you're the Nets, you're lopping off. If you get rid of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's hold for next year, which is $7.4 million, unless you just renounce him, and then Crabb and exchange it with Gasol's $6.7 million partial guarantee, you're saving really more than $20 million in cap space. But since you can get rid of Rondae anyway, it's about $12 million. And there's a chance that you save even more, because who knows if Gasol is going to want to stay in Brooklyn, and perhaps in a buyout he's willing to give back more than he would be getting in that partial guarantee. That was a really long rant, but that's the type of deal that I think the Nets would have to be on the lookout for. Is there a team that's willing to just take Crabb shooting, and maybe RHJ is a sweetener to absorb that money?
Yeah, I hadn't. What I was thinking was what we traditionally think of as sweeteners, like first round picks and stuff. And I had the same thought as you, that I can't imagine. First of all, Brooklyn isn't going to want to give up a pick at this point. I don't think they should still be in sort of an asset collection mindset. So I wasn't thinking you can get off Crabb's contract by giving up a first, just because I'd rather eat the money and
right
still have those future assets. But
unless you really don't value Denver's pick this year.
Yeah.
But maybe. Again, it's a first round pick.
Yeah, I think I would probably rather have that, just given where they are as a franchise right now. But the idea of attaching him to a player like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, if he's not in your plans anyway, then that certainly makes it a little bit more interesting. In answer to D-Rock's question, I'm sure Sean Marks would probably love to get that cap space. It's just, I don't think it's going to be really easy to find a team that's willing to take on the rest of that Alan Crabb contract.
And the Nets they don't need to clear cap space unless they really value it. And we don't know how stars are going to view them in free agency, but they can still easily get to max money. If you renounce RHJ and you renounce D'Angelo Russell, you're basically there. And depending on how much Russell costs, you can still get there. So yeah. I don't think it's a pressing concern. If an opportunity like that arose, and if I'm the Spurs, I was looking at this more from a San Antonio perspective. If you want to make the playoffs, and just based on how you treated the Kawhi Leonard trade, my guess is you would. It's something that I would consider.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. And for either side, it's not like a completely prohibitive contract if you get Crabb or if you keep Crabb. Obviously, it hurts for this summer, but 2019-20 is the last year of the deal. So, you get out of it fairly quickly. I guess you would just have to do an assessment of where you think you are as a free agency player this summer. And Brooklyn, to me, would certainly have higher hopes of getting someone than San Antonio at this point. There's a lot of different things to think about there if you're the Brooklyn Nets, but I'm certain that somebody in that front office has been working on some kind of machinations of potential Alan Crabb deals.
For sure. Where do you want to go next? Your turn.
Sixers, this is from Voltix, at VOLTIXFTW. This one isn't a specific player, but Sixers' reluctance to fill their open roster spot means they already have a trade in line, don't they? Don't they? I thought he sounded frantic at the end, so I dramatized that for you.
I appreciate that. My guess, maybe, if it's going to be like a lopsided trade, but they don't necessarily have the like. If you're who are you trading that's going to bring you back, or what combination of players are you trading that's going to bring you back an extra player? My guess is that they're hoping to keep the flexibility for the buyout market in the coming months.
Well, my only thought is maybe there's a Fultz deal. His name is certainly going to be thrown around a lot between December 15th and the trade deadline. He's after the Jimmy Butler trade, they really don't have any other great assets in terms of players to move anyway. It's not like TJ McConnell is going to be enticing people.
Right, like they could put picks in there, obviously, and you do have some salary filler with Muscala and Chandler. Even if you want to treat Fultz as salary filler, I don't think they're going to trade Fultz, would be my guess right now.
You think he makes it through the year?
Yeah, because what is his – how much worse is his trade value going to get between now and the summer? If he's not playing now, it's not going to get any worse if he doesn't play again.
Very true. I can't remember which podcast it was, but man, it might have been Zach Lowe or somebody was predicting that he's already played his last game in a Sixers uniform.
And that could be true, but I don't know if that means they move him this season.
Yeah, I was going to say that doesn't eliminate what you just said, that they might have him sit the rest of the season and still move him this summer. But I think an overarching question for Philly, too, is I'm still not sold on their entire team. I love the top-end talent that they have, and I think that starting lineup makes a ton of sense. But one of the reasons they closed so strong last season was Ilyasova and Bellinelli, and of course those guys were buyouts, so that would go toward your point that maybe they'll just wait to see what the buyout market has to offer. Because that extra shooting punch they had off the bench last season was huge for them.
And it's hard to make deals for them that deepen the roster if you don't include Fultz, because he's a guy you're not using, and if you're trading both Chandler and Muscala, unless you're getting three players back, you're almost thinning out your roster, and I guess that would leave you more flexible for the buyout market. I just don't know what deals are. I mean, they could try and get involved in the Trevor Ariza sweepstakes, but even then, you're tasked with coming up with salary filler, and you could trade a one-for-one, but what is that really doing for you?
Yeah, I don't know.
My one-for-one point was basically Wilson Chandler, because you don't have anybody else, obviously, to go one-for-one.
Yeah, so in answer to Voltic's question, I would say they probably are at least thinking about possibilities. I'm sure they've had some Fultz offers lobbed their way, but they're maybe not really an urgent sense to make a trade right now.
If we want to stay on Fultz, though, we have two questions, and one I think we can breeze through. Nathan Sherman at Nathan Sherman 21, Fultz to Detroit, he asks. I know that was a rumor being floated around, I think. I can't remember who reported it or necessarily where it came from. No. I don't know. The Sixers aren't going to want Reggie Jackson, and to now carry Fultz and Reggie Jackson at the same time gets really difficult. You're not getting out of that deal, to me, unless you include Kennard and or your first-round pick. I don't want to give up either of those right now for Fultz. I mean, there are permutations that could work. The Sixers aren't going to take on John Lohr, but maybe you could build something around Ish Smith and Langston Galloway, or Langston Galloway and Glenn Robinson. There are deals, but I don't want to give up Kennard or a first-round pick if I'm the Pistons as part of that.
Kennard and Redick on the same team would be kind of funny, though. The two white...
Those two and Shamit? Just all these little J.J. Reddicks running around on the Sixers?
Yeah. J.J. Reddick's swan song is teaching the future versions of himself.
That's J.J. Redick instant messaging you right now. I'm telling you to shut up. The other Markel Fultz one, maybe a little bit more realistic, from Ben Otwell at Ben_Reed, R-E-I-D, 94. How do the Magic get Markel Fultz? And I kind of like the Magic as sort of, I know they're hanging around the Eastern Conference playoff picture, but I would like them to kind of take a swing on Fultz. And it depends on how low the Sixers are willing to sell on him. I know Zach Lowe floated trades built around Jonathan Simmons and Terrence Ross. I don't know if the Sixers accept that. Something that's more interesting, and it's only because I don't think he's a wing and you don't want to chain him to a bench role in the big picture, would be Jonathan Isaac and then pair him with one of those salaries, and then you go for Fultz. But that's ascribing real value to Markelle Fultz, and I think Jonathan Isaac is going to be a fantastic defender. He already is kind of there.
If you're Orlando, would I think it's a real question between Isaac and Fultz, just straight up. Like, which one would you rather have?
It's if you want to take the big swing, because Isaac isn't going to be that cornerstone type piece. I think he's good. It's just he's not. Fultz might be, if he becomes who he's supposed to be, someone you can build not just an entire team around, but a good team around. And Jonathan Isaac isn't going to be that. He's more of the complimentary defensive hustle guy. They've experimented with stuff with him off the dribble. Maybe he continues to improve his spot up shooting. He has value. I'm just saying, if you want to swing for the fences and you know that you have Gordon and Bamba, that's something that you could theoretically consider.
I'm becoming more and more skeptical of Markelle Fultz long term.
Which is fair. You could tell me that that trade's shit. That's totally fine.
But that's just me. And it's probably too early to give up on him. So I haven't like fully given up, but I'm becoming more and more skeptical of him.
Here's kind of a fun exercise then. Who would you trade? I want to just go down this list really quick. And it's easy in the beginning. Who would you trade from the other 2017 draft picks, consider trading straight up for him? Number two is Lonzo Ball. I would say no.
No.
Jason Tatum obviously is a no.
No.
This is going to get Josh Jackson of Phoenix.
Yes.
Interesting.
I absolutely would. I think he's a mess.
De'Aaron Fox is already the best point guard of that class. Number five, that's a no. Jonathan Isaac I would still consider, but I get it.
I think that's shaky.
Lauri Markkanen, no.
No, yeah.
Frank Ntilikina. Obviously, all these salaries wouldn't work right off the bat. I'm just trying to go through the lottery picks.
I think that one is also, I'll put that in the shaky category with Jonathan Isaac.
Dennis Smith Jr.
Same, shaky.
I would do it. He's played really, there's something between him and Luka Doncic when they play alongside one another. Offensively, it seems like there could be a really good fit long term. I would take the swing because I think that the fit between Fultz and Doncic would be incredible. And let's just look at what Rick Carlisle gets out of every single point guard on his roster.
Yeah. And it's also pretty crazy what happens to the Mavericks when Doncic plays without Smith. Although you'd probably have some of the same friction, at least right now, with Doncic and Fultz.
Right.
But that one's in the maybe category for me.
Zach Collins, who is on Portland right now.
Man. That one's kind of team dependent to me because
why do you want Fultz, McCollum, and Lillard on the same team?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I might even say no on that one.
Malik Monk. I would
guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if Philly would do it, but maybe would they do Malik Monk and Jeremy Lamb for Markelle Fultz? That would be a hell of a swing by Charlotte.
See, that I'm not sure I would do if I was Charlotte. I think Jeremy Lamb's kind of good.
He actually is really good. What if you could do, I don't really know what they just don't have good salary filler, but if you could go Monk, Alato protected first, and Marvin Williams, like for Markelle Fultz.
Marvin Williams would make sense in Philly, too, as their stretch four.
Luke Kennard. I'm only doing it if I'm Detroit. I know this doesn't apply just to the player. I'm only doing it if you could attach, like, a Jackson or a Lure, get out of one of those contracts in the same trade.
Correct. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's kind of interesting that I had hesitation for Fultz and Kennard. The number one pick just a couple years ago. It's crazy.
It's because Kennard's more plug and play, and while you could take the swing on Fultz, what if he turns into nothing?
Yeah, and there's, I think that chance is very real. Although, and I know at the very least that Kennard can shoot.
I will say when I kind of balked at you saying you'd trade, I'm just looking at it right now, that you would trade Josh Jackson for Fultz. They have like identical true shooting percentages, and Fultz has been like absolutely awful and barely able to play. So that's just that's a feather in your cap.
Jackson's been really bad.
This is a tough. Oh, go ahead.
Game last night where he just looked like a runaway train, and at one point he spun to nowhere and chucked it 5 feet out of bounds. It was crazy. He looks completely he just looks several years away on a lot of very basic basketball things.
There are only two first round picks. Oh, there are three first round picks who have a worse box plus minus than Josh Jackson from this 2017 class.
Who are they?
Tony Bradley.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's probably played like 100 minutes.
29 minutes.
Okay.
Caleb Swanigan.
Okay.
And TJ Leaf.
Oh, interesting. All three guys that have barely played.
Yeah. Anyway, to wrap up this exercise, here's a hard one. Donovan Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, that's real tough.
This would be interesting. It wouldn't be Philly that would be the team for this, but if you could involve a third team and you're Miami, Bam Adebayo. They need half-court offense so bad, and they suck this year anyway. I wonder.
Bam.
Yeah, you're probably right.
He could. He's already there. He already makes more sense as a starting center for them than Hassan Whiteside, and you could have him for the next 5 or 6 years. I think he's pretty good.
There are arguably three players on their roster who make more sense as a starting center than Hassan Whiteside.
That's fair, too.
That kind of does that. Do you have a question that you want to go to?
That was fun. That was a nice...
That some of those were, like, awkward thinkers. The Josh Jackson one, the Neil Aquino one.
I don't know about this particular trade, but it'll get us talking about Bradley Beal. This is from Kai Ridiculous at Cam Ham 25. JV and OG for Bradley Beal. Like I said, I don't like that deal for Toronto. First of all, but I think this will get the ball rolling on a Bradley Beal discussion. Jonas Valanciunas and OG Anunoby for Bradley Beal.
I mean,
I'll explain why I don't like it. I love Toronto's depth, and the bench has not been as good this year as it was last year. But I just looked this up the other day. When Kawhi is on the floor, they're plus 9.1 points per 100 possessions. When Kawhi is off the floor, they're plus 8.1 points per 100 possessions. Very little difference there. Very good with and without him. And I think that a lot of that has to do with their depth. So... To me, that's something that I would want to preserve if I'm Toronto. And Jonas Valanciunas has been great for them this season. He has really embraced that role that they gave him coming off the bench, and he is just killing people in it.
He's obviously out with the thumb injury now, but he is playing. I don't know the exact. I should look this up, but he's playing so like fewer minutes than I even realized that he was compared to last season. So he's gone from his minutes have been cut by. Close to 22.4 to 18.8, and he's averaging more points per game. So he's getting to the free throw line more times per game. This is just, he's been fantastic. And the other reason, I agree with everything you said, what we really can't sort of discount is that the Raptors are one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the NBA right now. When you filter out garbage time, they rank 27th, and Jonas Valanciunas is their best defensive rebounder. So unless you think Greg Monroe can come in and take his minutes, it's not even just about the depth issue. It's about you make your rebounding worse because Bradley Beal is not going to help you there.
Yeah, I think those are all good points.
I know you were hoping this would segue into a Bradley Beal discussion, which I think there's a question that relates to it, but I'm going to segue this into an Anthony Davis discussion.
Oh, okay.
Is that a curveball? So let's say Anthony Davis doesn't sign his extension this year. I know everyone pegs the Lakers and the Celtics as the teams that would have the best packages for him. And maybe you're right if the Pelicans are willing to go full-on rebuild and invest in a bunch of unknowns, but the Raptors could make one of the more intriguing trade offers for Anthony Davis. If they know Kawhi's coming back, you have Siakam, you have OG Anunoby, who are close to known quantities, and I think Siakam has legitimate all-star upside, and then they're going to have all this salary filler. Like, Valanciunas will be expiring. Ditto for Serge Ibaka. And you could build the Pelicans. They're still going to have Drew Holiday. They're still going to have Etuan Moore. They could still potentially re-sign Mirotic. I don't know if they would keep Randle if they're losing Davis. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't start over, but in that market, you know, you can build a functioning offense around Drew Holiday, Jonas Valanciunas pick and rolls. And if you have Anunoby and Siakam and some picks that you're also going to get from Toronto, and maybe you take on, like, maybe you expand it, get Norman Powell, take a chance on him, and you could get rid of Solomon Hill, or maybe you don't because you value the flexibility. But that would be, I'm just saying, if the Pelicans don't want to completely bottom out and they're not interested in what it will cost to keep, you know, what people need to remember is Brandon Ingram and Jaylen Brown are both going to be extension eligible this summer.
Yeah.
They could be really good players, but how much are you going to want to pay them in 1 year?
Yeah, that's interesting. I had never thought of them as a potential landing spot for Anthony Davis, but wow, that would that would be quite the roster if they wound up with him, Kawhi, and Kyle Lowry. Then you have a very real discussion between them and the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, you could. There are just so many things. Like, if you don't want, you can use Fred VanVleet as a salary filler, and imagine him and Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore playing together.
Yeah, you've piqued my interest
again, and I'm not saying Anthony Davis won't sign the extension. I know New Orleanians, rightfully so, are probably exhausted by this discussion, but at least I'm not talking about a Celtics trade. The Bradley Beal thing. So this is from AJ at Grzilla, G-R-R-Z-I-L-L-A. Best trades Lakers can make with Ingram. If we're talking strictly about this season, I would think that it's a Bradley Beal trade. Damian Lillard's not available. Kemba Walker's better, but he's going to be a free agent, so I don't know if you give up an Ingram for him. That would be my ceiling for them. I'm not sure who else. You know, now that Jimmy Butler is kind of off the market and Kawhi Leonard's already been traded, I don't know. This season, it doesn't seem like there's going to be that other superstar to come on the chopping block. The closest I could imagine is Bradley Beal, and that might even be a reach.
What's Ingram's value right now?
I'm still high on him, and I think if the problem is his fit with other ball dominators, that should still potentially appeal to teams that are looking to get younger or maybe looking for an offensive hub.
Yeah, and I was really high on him pre-draft. I think I fell off a little bit during his rookie year, and it's just sort of waned ever since then. But I had his numbers without LeBron in a stats thread a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, there is, like you said, there's some evidence that he would be fine in a different situation. But he's another guy like Fultz that I grow more skeptical of all the time.
How do you feel about Ball?
I still like Ball, and interestingly enough, it's kind of the same argument. I would love to see what he looked like without LeBron at this point. Although his last time I checked, and this could be different now because this has been a while, but his numbers were pretty similar with and without LeBron this season. But I think one of the things that made him so special last year was obviously he had the ball quite a bit more, and he was in control of a lot more. So this is an interesting role for him. I'm not out on Lonzo Ball.
Colin JJ Kraus X2, CK Kraus, K-R-A-U-S-S 7. Ball and Ingram is a must trade package in my eyes. Their trade value is higher than their future value. Keeping them would be limiting on a ceiling of a team, right? I'm just throwing this in there because it kind of ties into your
Ball point. And together, huh?
I just don't know who you're getting for that. I don't know. Maybe you could get Beal. I don't know if I'd want to give up. You almost have to give up. Well, no, you don't have to because you have salary filler that you could give up. But it's just, I'm trying to think of a team that would want both of them in exchange for what they're giving up. Maybe you wait it out and see if the Warriors are going to trade Draymond Green this summer, and that's the package you offer them.
Oh, wow, that would be interesting. Kevin Durant's leaving, so the Draymond Green thing will be moot at that point.
You think?
I still think so.
We actually have a question about that. I don't mean to hijack this, but... from Calvin Fong, at Cal_Fong, F-A-O-N-G, will the Warriors trade Draymond before 2020 when they'll have to give him the max?
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I think he's there for a while longer.
By the way, I want to say yes.
You know how you told me to tell you if that Bill Simmons, Kevin Durant podcast, anything good on it?
Yeah.
They do get into the... I can't remember how Simmons brought it up, but he said something like, why would you leave this team? You have a chance to be a part of this great dynasty. And they all kind of flipped out on him. Kevin Durant and his business manager, Rich Kleiman. And they were all like, you got into that terribly, blah, 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 blah. But they did talk about it, just to let you know.
Anything substantive in that conversation?
I think it was, to me, it sounded like a lot of deflecting from Durant.
What else can he do, though?
I know, which I was going to say, that's just normal at this point and probably the right thing to do. Definitely the right thing to do. But I don't think I heard anything in there that makes me feel more confident that he would stay with the Warriors. That's how I'll put it.
Regardless of whether he leaves, and regardless of whether they trade him this summer or it's a thing where he walks in free agency, I kind of think Draymond Green next season at most will be his last year with the Warriors. There just seems to be some like awkward tension between him and the organization. And this was almost predating the Durant stuff.
See, I was just going to say, and yeah, there probably is a little bit of truth to that, but I was going to say it seems like everything's fine as long as Durant's not there.
Right.
But to your point, I mean, I think there was some tension. I don't know how much of it was real and how much of it was drummed up by the media about how he kind of cost them the finals by losing his cool and smacking LeBron and all that.
Was it drummed up by the media? He actually cost them a championship.
I know. But what I'm saying is, how much did the Warriors actually resent him for that? That I don't know. So I think that's an open question. Ultimately, I think he stays with the Warriors. He'll be there beyond Kevin Durant. That's how I'll answer that question.
Well, that's a nice hedge. Kevin Durant could leave in July and they could trade him in August, and that counts.
Yes. All right, I have one. This is from MDPete_2, Matthew David Peterson. And we could probably talk about potential trades, even though he doesn't mention them. But are the Chicago Bulls the most dysfunctional franchise across all four major North American sports? My favorite new thing with the Chicago Bulls, and I didn't see this till this morning, they've apparently appointed a leadership committee. Have you seen this?
I was laughing last night.
Oh my gosh.
Can you name it just so they can get the full effect of who's in it and how ridiculous it is?
Bulls leadership committee is official. This is from Casey Johnson. Zach LaVine, Robin Lopez, Justin Holiday, Bobby Portis, and Lauri Markkanen.
So let's just to go over two players who won't be there next year, Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez, who might not even be there past the trade deadline, and Bobby Portis, who punched Nikola Mirotic in the face.
Oh man, what a mess. Jim Boylan just every new thing that comes out of Chicago. Maybe I actually love the guy because he's given me a lot of stuff to chuckle at.
We had two Bulls related questions. One of them was from Max at _TheMaxFactor. Does Jabari Parker have any trade value? And this is basically the same question. Heat expert at expert32780. Jabari Parker for Hassan Whiteside, who says no? I will answer the second one first. No would be on the Bulls' part. Unless you're getting a sweetener of some sort, you don't want to take on Hassan Whiteside at $25+ million next year when you can just get out of Parker's contract free and clear. Yeah. 27.1 next year, excuse me, his player option's worth. Does he have any trade value if you're willing to take back bag salary for a team that has a player they don't want, who's either under guaranteed next year or has a player option they think he's going to exercise? Maybe you can move Parker. You know, what if the Mavericks were just looking to hit detonate and were looking to get rid of Harrison Barnes so they could really maximize their cap space this summer? What if the Grizzlies, I don't know what they could sweeten it with because of their pick protections that are owed to Boston, but what if they want to get off Chandler Parsons? If the Bulls are willing to do something like that, then yes. Otherwise, no.
Yeah. I was going to say, and you basically said the same thing, but he does have value as an expiring contract.
You wanted him on the Jazz way back when, just throwing it out there.
And some of the SLC Dunk guys rightfully gave me crap about it yesterday.
I would just like to let them know that I was ahead of the curve and gave you shit last season about it.
Speaking of hedging, I just said, well, we still don't know what Quinn Snyder would have done with him. That's some amorphous response that I can always get away with.
Put your money where your mouth is. Derek Favors for Jabari Parker after January.
No, not at this point. But like you said, I think if you're looking at him as purely like a cap relief type of an asset, then yeah, you might be able to find somebody who will take that on. But he's, and I had this thought, you're going to balk at this. If people had figured out all the analytics and the importance of defense and spacing and all the stuff that we value nowadays, would Carmelo Anthony's career have been a lot different? Let's say all this stuff happens 10 years earlier. Or put it this way, if Jabari Parker came along 15 years earlier, is his career different?
I think you could say yes for both. Anthony could almost be in that Allen Iverson thing where, like, we could look back and I don't think Allen Iverson's career would be remembered the same way if we looked at analytics then the way we do now.
Yeah.
I will say, compared to Parker and Iverson, I would think Carmelo Anthony would have the best chance of, if again he came into the league now, adjusting to the way that the offense is being played. Just because we've seen him shoot well before, and I still wonder how much of this is just because he's actually old right now.
That's a good point. And if maybe some coach had gotten a hold of him early with really good defensive principles, maybe that changes.
Or what if he began his career as a four? Because, and maybe don't even change the play style.
That's true.
So I don't know. I do think there's definitely a chance. So I think that's an interesting question.
Yep.
I have one from Dylan Cantor at Bizarro's World 55. Can the Nuggets finagle a trade for Ariza or someone of similar ilk? For Ariza specifically, no, because the salary matching just gets really complicated. And the Suns don't have, you know, when you look at Denver's salaries, they're not going to, even though he's hurt, they're not going to move Will Barton. You're not trading Gary Harris for Ariza. You're not trading Jokic or Millsap, obviously. And then after those four players, your only real salary filler is Mason Plumlee. And while maybe you'd be willing to get off of his contract, he's good. He's just overpaid for the role that he's in. I still don't understand what Denver was doing when they re-signed him. He had zero leverage and they gave him that four-year deal. But he doesn't really have a place in Phoenix. So unless you're then going to sweeten the deal to get rid of Plumlee, that doesn't really make sense because he's actually a good player. So now you're going to pay a first round pick or a future pick or a prospect just to get off of a player who's actually okay. Somewhat of a similar ilk, and I'm interested to know what you think about this. They do need wing help, and if the Cavaliers don't want to pay Rodney Hood this summer, he could be traded in mid-January. How low are they willing to sell? Like, can you do like a Malik Beasley and Tyler Lydon for him, and they would accept it?
Yeah, that would be really interesting.
And maybe like a second round pick or something like that, but
he doesn't really fit their defensive resurgence. But I think it would be really interesting to see what Nikola Jokic could do for him on offense. Somebody was asking me about, it was actually Isaac Harris who hosts the Locked On Mavericks podcast, and he's been on this show in the past. He was asking me about potential Nuggets trades yesterday. And I think you've brought up the possibility of Kemba Walker if they just took like a home run swing. Mm-hmm. And maybe if Charlotte kind of falls off between now and the deadline, I think that would be really interesting. But my default with the Nuggets, unless there's something like that available or becomes available, is to just kind of ride it out. Most of these guys are still pretty young. Like Nikola Jokic is 23. Gary Harris and Jamal Murray are around that same age. We don't even know what Michael Porter is yet, but it'll be really interesting to see how all of these guys grow and develop together over the next few years if they keep it together. I think continuity is good for a lot of different teams, but I think particularly with a guy like Nikola Jokic, you can just sort of get a synergy between him and his receivers, for lack of a better word. I mean, it's like a quarterback receiver type of relationship. Mm-hmm. With this guy. So, I think my default is to just see how this continues to grow together.
The Hood thing would be interesting to me, though, if, you know, if you can get him for those guys and a protected second or something. And Hood actually hasn't been, it's for a terrible Cavaliers team, but he's shooting above 40% on pull-up jumpers.
He's been better. Yep.
Yeah. And he's hitting a good percentage of his threes. So, and like you said, maybe next to Nikola Jokic. But that would be the level of their deal, just because they lack the salary filler to make a blockbuster, unless, as you kind of alluded to, it's Plumlee and then Murray, and then like you're putting forth your best picks, or maybe even Michael, and you're trying to make that home run swing.
Yeah. Let's see. So mine got a ton of Utah Jazz trades. I'll just throw out one for the sake of like 10 of the responses that I got. And I got to find one that's like decent.
I have a Utah Jazz Bradley Beal question.
Okay, go ahead.
Eric Lynn friend at Hip Mr. Bully. Any remotely plausible way for the Jazz to acquire Beal without giving up Gobert or Mitchell?
I've given this answer so many times since the Wizards rumors broke, but I think it all just depends on what Washington wants to do. If their entire goal is to get out of salary, then yes, I do think Utah has a chance because they have so many expiring contracts. If their goal is just about anything else, then no, Utah's probably not a big player in that.
I don't even, for Beal, I don't think it would be. If it was Otto Porter, I'd probably be with you. But even, what's your best package? Like, if they're looking for actual value for Beal, it'd be something, once he's eligible to be traded, built around Favors, Grayson Allen, future firsts. Like, that's, and maybe you have Royce O'Neal. I don't know if that would do it.
Yeah, I don't know either. Because, like I said, they can give him cap relief, but like you're saying, there's probably somebody else out there who can give him cap relief and a better future asset. So, yeah.
Did you have any other Jazz ones? I know you had a lot of that you wanted to throw out there.
No, I think that'll suffice. Bradley and, okay, I lied. This is from Sports Opinion at another N Bat Wit. Bradley favors Cephalosha to the Cavs. So that's a bunch of expiring contracts, I guess. And Bradley, I don't know. Exum and Allen to the Magic. Love and Fournier to the Jazz. And then he says probably some picks to be had.
Oof. I don't know how low the Cavs are in Kevin Love's deal. I mean, they should be pretty low. That four-year, $120.4 million extension kicks in next year. Fournier's having a rough year, though. I almost don't like that trade for the Jazz. I'm like trying to remember the pieces. I'm not even sure if it's legal. It sounds like it probably would come pretty close. I don't know, especially if you're giving up picks. Fournier's had a rough year. He's under contract for, including this season, 3 years.
You're just hoping for a French connection there, Gobert and Fournier.
Yeah, I guess. And I mean, he would kind of satisfy what they need.
Yeah.
But the defense with him and Love on the court at the same time could be rough.
That's true. But I was going to say, I'm back on the Kevin Love to Utah bandwagon now that my Jabari Parker ship has sailed.
He's injured. Like, what?
Well, he won't be injured forever. He'll be fine. He'll be 2013 Kevin Love before you know it.
I have from Cheesy Gordita Crunk at NP unintended SP. No pun intended, I guess, whatever. Cheesy Gordita. Anyway, should the Bucks consider trading Chris Middleton rather than paying him a local max? My answer is no. If you were going to do that, it should have been for a Jimmy Butler or a Kawhi Leonard. And that player just, I don't know who you're going after now. That player isn't out there.
Yeah, I would hold on to him too. And it seems like that's kind of what they're aiming to do with the last.
And maybe you get lucky, perhaps, because he's not. The thing about Chris Middleton, and I don't know, a lot of people think him and Tobias Harris could get maxes in this market. When you look at where the superstars might go, there might be teams that are desperate, and it's possible. I think most teams will be more cautious after what happened in 2016 and what works. So maybe the Bucks get lucky there and he doesn't cost the max. But also, he only turns 28 in August, so giving him a five-year deal isn't the end of the world. And so perhaps if he's – that's going to take him through his prime. So perhaps he's willing to sign for less than the max if you're going to give him that 5-year contract.
Yeah. I think my much less thorough explanation or answer is I think they're going to keep him. Especially with the move that they made to create enough room to sign all their main guys next season.
Yeah. All right.
A couple minutes left. You want to do some rapid fire ones?
Yeah, let's roll.
Okay. This is from Corey DeMoss. The Thunder need a shooter badly. Who do you think will be on the market and actually attainable for OKC?
Should we say no one and move on?
Yeah, this isn't a question that I put a lot of thought into. I wondered if you had any ideas. I don't know which shooters will be available. I guess Utah took the big fish off that market already with Kyle Korver. I'm trying to think of anybody else off the top of my head.
Well, the other thing is like, who are they trading? Because I would say their 6 most paid players or highest paid players are just they're either immovable or not going to be moved. Westbrook, George, Adams, Schroeder, Robertson, and Grant. So you have Alex Abrines, who has not been good this year, shooting the ball terribly at $5.5 million expiring. You have Patrick Patterson, $5.5 million plus a $5.7 million player option. And then from there, you're looking at Terrence Ferguson, who makes $2.1 million TLC at $1.5. It gets tough to cobble together deals for shooters that are making any sort of money. If Miami hits detonate, there's Wayne Ellington to consider. I don't think that the Nets are going to trade Joe Harris. But how are you like, what is that package? Because Patterson and Abrines aren't too valuable on their own. So it's just, it's even like a CJ Miles. Yeah, you can see him maybe becoming available because his role is a little bit more limited in Toronto, though he is, you know, he's that like 15, 17, 19 minute per game guy for them. I just don't know what the package would be, and you don't want to trade first round picks too far off in the distance now.
I just had another one. Oh, Alexander Birch at the Notorious BBB. Just as Courtney Lee? ?
The Knicks are in a weird spot because he could be good.
That contract.
Yeah, but he's owed $12.8 million next year, and there's just not the sample size to justify even a contender taking him on. I thought maybe because Moutier's played well, could you kind of get him off in a deal if you're sending him to the Magic, who maybe want his bird rights, or the Suns, who might want Moutier's bird rights. Even then, it's tough. And I'm not about using Frank Ntilikina as a sweetener to get off Courtney Lee's or Tim Hardaway Jr.'s contract, for that matter.
At Brad Blue, and his is at Jason B. NBA. Otto Porter Jr. to the Kings, Zach Randolph, Willie Cauley-Stein, and 2 seconds to the Wizards.
I think if they're going to trade Porter, the Kings are interesting, but I think the deal needs to be better than that. It's just, I would think that maybe they would want Shumpert or Justin Jackson. I know you're trying to deepen your wing depth, but I would think Justin Jackson has to be in that deal.
And I would gladly give him for Otto Porter, I think. At Seth WBLAK, I know you're not an NBA team, but will you take Wiggins?
Nope. Moving on.
Yeah.
ESPN floated a trade for him to the Kings. If I'm the Kings, they could still have a ton of cap space with him. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I have two.
Do you want to quickly? Yeah,
let's go. That I wanted to get to. Where was this one? I think it was at the bottom. From Jordan Scott at Jordan 53. Do you think Stanley Johnson is available? If so, what would it take to get him? And this one's from, this is going to be tied into my answer, from Ryan Jackson at RM Jackson. Are there any options for the Pacers to update? I'm assuming he meant upgrade their roster. I think there are for the Pacers. They could, the Ariza sweepstakes would be interesting for them, but I don't think Darren Collison alone gets it done for Phoenix. And then if I'm Indiana, I don't want to give up much more than that for him. Maybe they can latch on as that third team who gets KCP just because he's someone who has more defensive versatility than Collison, and he's been shooting the ball, I think, over his last 8 games, over 40% from deep. That would be something to look at. But the trade I came up with here, and I would say yes, Stanley Johnson's very much available. The Pistons need shooting. He's headed for restricted free agency. The problem is, since he's headed for restricted free agency, since he really I shouldn't say really, he's not a good shooter. And since he really hasn't continued to develop as this great ball handler, I don't know what you're going to get for him. So here is the trade I came up with, and it is a four-team trade. The Phoenix Suns get Reggie Jackson, Norman Powell, a 2019 second from Detroit, a 2020 second from Toronto. The Raptors get Kyle O'Quinn. The Pacers get Trevor Ariza and Stanley Johnson. The Pistons get, and these are all expirings, Darren Collison, Troy Daniels, and Dragan Bender. There might be a team in there. Perhaps it would have to be Detroit. They'll be willing to give up a first in this deal, or maybe Indiana's willing to throw in a second as well so that the Suns are getting a bunch of seconds. But if you could buy low on Norman Powell, Jackson's deal expires after next year, and you do need a point guard. This would be something, and if you're the Raptors, you could get off some money, and I don't know where they really are with Norman Powell, who again hasn't been healthy this year, but that would be a nice buy low wing candidate for Phoenix, and someone who is, he's on his first year of his four-year $42 million extension, and when you're looking at it, he's not super young, but at 25, going on 26 in May, he's someone who might be able to fit a rebuilding timeline.
I'm in on it. I like it. I'm rubber stamping that one.
The other one I wanted to get to was Solve Miami. And which is hard. This comes from Miami Dude at Miami Savage Swag. We also had a question, and I can't find it right now. Can the Heat trade Tyler Johnson or Hassan Whiteside without giving up a pick? My answer to that would be a resounding no.
Yeah.
But I came up with this deal in an article I wrote for Bleacher Report, and I'm actually trying to – it was like sort of complicated, but not really. So it's – the deal would be, it's a three-team trade between Atlanta, Miami, and New Orleans. So it would be the Hawks receive Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, a 2019 first-round pick – top 10 protection from Miami turns into two future seconds, 22 and 2025, if it doesn't convey, a 2020 second round pick from the Pelicans. And Miami would receive Dwayne Dedmon, Solomon Hill, Wesley Johnson, Jeremy Lin. New Orleans receives Kent Bazemore, Derrick Jones Jr. I know that's kind of complicated to digest, but the crux of it is this. If you're Atlanta, Kent Bazemore compared to Tyler Johnson. Johnson is a little bit younger. You're going to lose Jeremy Lin after this season anyway. Same with Dwayne Dedmon. You could put Johnson and Trae Young in the same backcourt or have Johnson come off the bench just for a year. So you're essentially just you're swapping out Kent Bazemore and Tyler Johnson. And Tyler Johnson, arguably, just looking at the Hawks and what they're trying to do, could be a better fit. So what you're doing now is you're giving up two players you're not going to keep anyway. And you're getting back two picks just to eat Hassan Whiteside's money. And I think that's something they might consider. For Miami, you're getting all expiring contracts except for Hill, who's on the books for $12.7 million next season. But you're ducking the tax this year. And then you're ducking the tax next year, at least projected, which gives you flexibility to re-sign Rodney Magruder, Wayne Ellington, maybe go outside the organization and get some help. The Pelicans, if you can get a wing without giving up a first-round pick, is a big deal for them. You're adding about $6 million in salary next year, but I do believe Bazemore, especially because of what he can do off the dribble on offense, is an overall upgrade over Solomon Hill. And Derrick Jones Jr., I think, would be kind of a sneaky, intriguing fit in Alvin Gentry's offense. It's not something that gets Anthony Davis to stay on his own, but you have path to getting cap space, even with Bazemore on the books this summer. And I also don't know how valuable a ton of cap space is to a team like New Orleans. I don't know what type of free agents they're going to appeal to. And so maybe just having Bazemore and still the flexibility to keep Mirotić and or Randall is a nice position for them to be in.
I like that one too. Unfortunately, I do have to run. But if you guys want to hit us up on Twitter about any of these wonderful trade ideas that we have digested, and maybe we'll put some of these ones that Dan has put together in actual written form in a tweet with the link to the podcast. Maybe you'd be able to see them a little bit better there. Find Dan on Twitter at Dan Favale, F-A-V-A-L-E. I'm at Andrew D. Bailey. The show is at Hardwood Knox. The sponsor is at NBA underscore math. As always, we urge you to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. If you've done that already, make sure you are coercing someone else into doing that as well. And until next time, we leave you with the shout out to Ben Oudry and Kyle Anderson. You gotta be so cold to make it in this world. Yeah, you're a natural, living your life cutthroat. You gotta be so cold. Yeah, you're a natural. Alexa, play Imagine Dragons. Okay. 'Cause you're a with Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get access to over 50 million songs. Download the Amazon Music app today. What if every time you went out, you could cash in? Now with the Capital One Saver Card, you earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, like their first taste of guacamole. Ew, gross. And 4% cash back when you take your kids to the museum for the first time. Whoa, buddy, don't touch that. No matter your reason for going out, now you have four more. Introducing the new Saver Card from Capital One. Earn 4% on dining and 4% on entertainment. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One Bank, USANA.